This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're the Buffalo Roaming 1200.
Joining as an expansion team in 1970, this franchise has featured stars like left winger Rick Martin and goalie Dominic Hasek. Isaac.
We're the Sabres.
Right.
Who are the Sabres indeed? That should have been a question. What is Sabres life, Duffer? That should have been on Jeopardy. And we would have been featured on the show. Although, I'll tell you this, Isaac won, so he's going to the finals for the Tournament of Champions because he got the final Jeopardy right, but that gave him a nice boost in games. So they don't usually do good on hockey question or sports question, Duffer. I think we should have our very own Sabres Live Jeopardy sports tournament and make it happen.
It's going to be hard to do when the show's canceled.
Well, we're not going to get canceled.
I mean, we are canceled. We're not on tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're not on tomorrow. Tomorrow is a day off, and then in a couple of weeks, we're going to skip a Monday, Tuesday as well. So we're getting a light schedule
called
here.
Called a precursor. It's foreshadowing.
It's because
end
of my
is,
voice.
End is
it's
nigh.
Because of my voice. They're giving me a day off. So everybody's taking
right?
off. Yeah.
Well, a more relevant Jeopardy question would have been pertaining to the current roster or lack thereof because of the uncertainty. Who knows who's playing on Saturday against Nashville?
Yeah. Will he play?
They definitely
on
wouldn't
Saturday.
Have answered that correctly. I can assure you of that.
Who is unsure of playing on Saturday? Is Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins, Ukko Pekka Luukkonen, Tyson Kozak. You've got all these guys that are dealing with Beck Malenstein with some ailments. So who knows what that's going to look like right now? If I'm looking at the forward group, I'm looking at. There could potentially be only 9 forwards available for the game. If Malenstein's not available, if Dylan Cousins isn't available, if Tage Thompson isn't available, like the Sabres finished last game with 10 forwards, and that included Dylan Cousins. So they could be down to 9 if any of these guys are available for Saturday.
Right, but Kozak certainly appears likely.
Appears likely, but again, like,
I mean, maybe I'm overstating it, but like if you're sick,
and then you
come back and you're back in practice. I mean, Zucker came back quicker than expected, despite being at the bottom of the barrel from an illness standpoint. So,
yeah, and I think that would be fair. But again, now you're saying, OK, you got 10 forwards with Isaac Roseanne and Tyson Kozak in your lineup, right? I mean, it's a different group of 12. I mean, maybe Sam Lafferty comes back in, and after the
obviously Lafferty comes back in.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
or do you say, oh, you know what, we'll call somebody up from Rochester and give somebody an opportunity for one game in Nashville, knowing that, putting guys on the IR right now, it doesn't matter. They would only miss one game because you have 2 weeks off after that. So you could do a lot of roster flexibility with wanting to do whatever you want with IR movement or call-ups. You have everything because it's just one game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more you verbalize this, A, not knowing whether Thompson's coming back, but okay, so you finished with 10. You subtract Cousins potentially, but you simply insert Kozak and Lafferty and you're at 11 and you go 11-7 like they've done 100 times.
Yeah, that maybe is the simple
it's
answer.
It's really not that hard, I don't think. But
well, this is like Isaac on Jeopardy. He's like, who are the Sabres? Very simple. Everybody probably is guessing, like, who are the Buffalo Bills or Bulls or Bandits or not knowing the answer, right? So, look, it may be as simple as Kozak, Lafferty are in and you're sticking with 7D. Look,
you may also have Cousins and Thompson here, so
that could be available for the game. So
that would be my hunch is that they're going to be a lot closer to full health than what this off day from practice speculation is leading us down.
Yeah, today's a day off, and tomorrow they're going to practice and fly out to Nashville for a 8 p.m. Puck drop Eastern time Saturday, 7:30. We're going to be on the pregame. But also, sometimes you schedule things. Like they did have the skate yesterday. Often you'll take a day off, and then you'll skate 2 days in a row. But we had an event last night at Seneca Niagara Casino with the team, and so that was good. So today is a day off. You get the event. You know, it's great charity event last night, and then you move on to your last game before the break, which you could win five in a row. You could make a big difference. Look at the way that the Eastern Conference is doing right now. I get it. You're last in the Eastern Conference, but I mean, going into the break, having won five in a row would be somewhere to step off in 3 weeks when everything returns.
You have any idea who they're playing in a couple of weeks?
When they return on the 22nd?
Yeah, without looking, but you're looking, so you're
No, I'm
cheating.
Not looking. I remember that it was the 22nd because Jordan Greenway is expected to play on the 22nd, but I have no idea who that's against.
Apparently it's the Rangers.
Okay. Well, the Rangers are doing better now, so that's good for them. They won last night.
Apparently it's Anaheim after that. And then Carolina, then Montreal, and then all heck breaks loose because once you get into March.
Oh.
Well, honestly, the end of February, from the 25th to all the way into April 1st, you're looking at, close to 20 games in well under 40 days. Like it's obviously based on inserting this break into the schedule, there's a unfortunate fallout, my opinion, clearly not anybody else's, and it becomes wickedly compressed. So you start going at a pace for about 5 to 6 weeks of more than every other day. And so it's great if you're trying to climb the ladder.
You got lots of games in a short time.
You got lots of games. So you shouldn't be sitting there thinking, oh, we lost. No. Just keep winning. Keep gaining ground. That's the whole thing. But, we're starting the show here talking about roster and who's in and who's out. That becomes the time of year where your depth gets critically tested. Plus, about 10 days into that stretch, you have the trade deadline. So who knows what to anticipate?
Well, you're right. Who knows what to anticipate? Because depending on how you are between now and March 7th, it may lead to some changes, one way or the other. Or maybe nothing, because you're in a position where you're like, okay, we're going to stay status quo because of where we are. And there's some teams that are going to be in the same category. There's a lot of rumors flying around right now. We've heard the rumors on Bo Byram for a while and Dylan Cousins for a while. So we're going to have Shayna Goldman join us and Darren Dreger later in the show. But I mean, there's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of people calling the Buffalo Sabres right now ahead of this Four Nations face-off, but also wanting to see what is their plan moving forward. Well, I don't think there's a plan right now. There's probably multiple plans, but not one definite plan as to what they want to do.
Here's one from out of left field for you.
Oh.
You have any idea what's up with Yaroslav Askarov?
Like he got called up after the All-Star break and...
Well, what do you mean called up? He's been up with San Jose forever based on the Vanacek injury.
Yeah, but I think didn't they send him down just for paper transaction, called him back up or something?
Probably, because I can't find record of the transaction and he's not listed on the game notes for San Jose anymore and he's not listed in their statistics. And I'm like, what happened to this man?
They wiped him off the face of the earth.
It's ridiculous. I complain about this a lot when we pick up a set of game notes and somebody who's not on the active roster, all of a sudden their contributions to the team have disappeared for the season. I'm like, well, that's not right. But literally between the AHL site and looking at San Jose's game notes today. It's like Askarov is nowhere to be found. You go to the AHL site, you see an X beside his name, because so that means he's up there. He's up with the big club. And you go to the big club, it's like, you know, he's not here.
He's in transit. He's in transit. They kind of don't know.
He's in San Jose either way.
but he's in transit from one locker room to the other. Like, it takes a while to walk across with your equipment. No. That is one out of left
field. It's weird, right?
Like, my goodness, though. Like, okay, so last night we had the charity event, and I'm there and talking with, you know, our buddy David Leggio, who's there, there was other people, goalies that we were talking shop. We're talking goalies. And my first question to Leggio, because he's good buddy with Podorolski. So he watched that whole game the other night with San Jose and Montreal. And I look over and I'm like, how bad was Georgiev? And he goes, dude, he can't catch a puck. It looks like he forgot to play goalie. Like, we went on this tangent of Georgiev and how he seems lost. And how San Jose is probably not the best place for him to gain his confidence back. Like, they're not the best of teams. And it's a bad situation.
You guys would know better. I think I sometimes view it like, and confidence is a tricky word, but like, I sometimes, look, let's be honest. How many goaltenders in the last 12 years came through here and exceeded expectations, from Anders Lindback to, you know what I mean? So I'm sorry. That's how I look at those situations. Like, you know, the team's not pressed for standings points. You can do everything you've been capable of without fear of, you know, backlash from fans, management, coaches, because you're not going to the playoffs. You know what I mean? Anyway. That's neither here nor there. Yep. Interesting topic, but yes. And on that line of, you know, thinking, training is important for wherever your next step is in development. So we want you to enter to win the Ultimate Youth Hockey Training Pack. It includes a regulation net with backstop, easy puck shooting board, bucket of pucks, maybe an autograph from Marty. Visit sabres.com/training to enter today. Shayna,
bucket of pucks. Yeah, I want that just for the bucket of pucks. I lose pucks all the time when I'm on the ice for practice.
That was also
the worst thing with youth hockey. You lose pucks everywhere, and your bucket just kind of dwindles practice after practice after practice, and they're not cheap.
They are not cheap. They're the things that always go missing, even when you have something with, like, that nice cage. It's like, there's a hole somewhere, and that puck's going to find it.
Also the most overused cliche as we approach the trade deadline, right? Throwing
a bucket of pucks. I would take this play. I wouldn't take this play for a bucket of pucks. Like, you know what? There's value there.
A dozen hockey sticks is worth a lot of money, though. When you consider that sticks are $300 a pop, a dozen of them, that's almost $4,000. So that's worth a lot if you get a dozen sticks.
There you go.
Shayna, I don't know if you knew this, but our show's being canceled specifically tomorrow. that's why you're on early. Yeah. So
I was coming, and they were like, we got to cut her before she can say something. We don't know what's coming out of her mouth this week.
I swore. I didn't swear. I used a bad word on the show 2 weeks ago. So they're like, bad influence, Shayna. She is on Marty. So that's what it is.
I somehow haven't slipped up here, because I think before I speak, when I do things when I'm not supposed to curse, like, too many men, it's just coming out.
You got 16 minutes to hold true to that. we'll see where it goes.
I'll do my best.
Okay. Big money. Again, for the second time in his career, it's always nice when you have people in your corner. And clearly, Marcus Pettersson has had Jim Rutherford in his corner for a long time. So much so that the Pettersson family, for generations, will benefit from this incredible relationship and admiration for a player who Marty and I enjoyed immediately in his early days with Pittsburgh, which was not his first organization. He started with Anaheim. Rutherford brought him to Pittsburgh. But now Pettersson, after a very, very, very short period of time in Vancouver, has himself a monster contract extension at 5 years and $33 million. Again, I like the player, but I lean on you, Shayna, to give us a little bit of perspective as to what Pettersson's value is presumably from like defensive metrics, because that's what he is more geared towards, but also now because he's at the front end of signing an extension from a defensive player's standpoint as we get into this era of watching the salary cap explode.
Yeah. It's always funny how like these old school general managers have their guys, right? And Marcus Pedersen's definitely that, but like there are worse defensemen to put your, you know, flag in the ground for, I would say, because he's actually good. And we know the Canucks are so intent on collecting Pedersens, and here you go. Okay. It's not a bad contract. I actually kind of like the deal. I don't like what the Canucks spent to bring him to Vancouver. I don't like that they moved their first round pick that quickly. I thought it was an overpayment, even with the extension in mind. But if we set that aside, because we have to compartmentalize our hockey analysts sometimes, the contract itself is not bad, in my opinion, because you look at what he's worth, and when you account for the rising salary cap, it's going to benefit the middle class the most, right? We hear superstars, they're going to be worth $20 million. Maybe they will be, maybe they won't be, but you're going to hear this like middle class benefit, and maybe we won't be debating so much what they're worth, because how agonizing is it sometimes that a second pair defenseman gets paid and everyone's like, well, the GM's going to regret that, and you don't even focus on the fact if he's a fit, if it works. You're just so focused on the dollars and cents. So I hope that this kind of alleviates that a little bit, but into the dollars and cents, I like this deal for him. I think he's worth a little bit more than that with the rising cap in mind. I think this comes in right below his market value. If you look at Dom's model over at the Athletic, and I believe he tweeted the player card with this already, he had this range, I feel he was going to go. And I think the ideal player model for him in terms of contract and what he gives to a lineup is someone like Esa Lindell, right? Because he's not the play driver on his pair. He's never going to be. But he is someone who can keep up and complement a top pair defenseman who is offense, which is a skill to have, right? Not everybody can do it their defensive weight. And he has some good puck moving skills. He's a good puck retriever. He's good at exiting the zone. He just doesn't shoot the puck as much as Lindell. So that's going to be the one difference in their points, but they still fall in like a similar range. So that contract was $5.8 million a year that's ending this year for Lindell. So he's really close to that. I think that it's a good range to be in. He's below the Brady Shea mark, which I think it should have been the goal for Vancouver, especially when he's not going to be their top pair guy in Nashville. View Shea is a little bit more. I think he's in the right range for what he is.
Okay, so then my next question leads on to Bo Byram, because Bo Byram is going to need a new contract, and Marcus Pedersen is 5.5. Brady Shea is $7 million. Do you anticipate Bo Byram in Buffalo or elsewhere to get more than the $7 million that Brady Shea got as a UFA last year and be like in that $7 to $7.5 million range for Bo Byram?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because he's someone who should benefit from this rising cap, right? Because I think otherwise you would have seen him in a lower range, and I feel like this opens the door to him earning more. It'll be interesting to see what the signing team views him as. And we see in Buffalo, he's being viewed as more than he was in Colorado, right? In Colorado, he was stuck on the third pair in sheltered minutes because it was just the reality of the depth ahead of him. While in Buffalo, despite having more lefties, you can make the case for him to get more minutes. It's going to be interesting, though, because the Sabres have big cap, you know, contracts already on defense. How many defensemen, how many left-handed defensemen? I know Darlene generally plays on the right, but how many left-handed defensemen can you invest in is going to be a good question to ask. Is $7 million asking for too much? Can you go that cheap on the right to balance it out? And it's always a good question to have. Another team might view it differently because they might have a bigger hole on the left side. And it's always interesting when you get into the lefty-righty discussion, because the righties are generally worth more. And I think a general manager would have an easier time giving that right-handed defenseman that $7 million versus the lefty, even if the lefty is what they actually need. So it like convolutes the whole situation a little bit further, but I could definitely see him, especially the fact that he's younger. You're making a bet at a different time than you would be for a Lindell, for a Pedersen, right? And I think that's the biggest part of it. If you sign him to $7 million, you are projecting that his peak value, which is the prime of his career, which he's entering, is what you're paying for, instead of getting into those nitty gritty years into his mid 30s where you'd be so worried about it.
Right. Like, you know, Pedersen's already late 20s, and obviously we saw JT Miller and, you know, his contract. And it's a great point with Byram, and it's really important. That's why I led with Pedersen, because it's just these are areas where Sabre fans are wondering, like, what not only what do you do with Byram, but like, if you're trying to balance that group and bring in a more defensive type of player, like, what is the market going to bear? And honestly, like, we're trending to, or we're traveling towards the trade deadline here, and you get similar names coming up that have been there in years past, and certainly Buffalo as a market, a fan base, watched Rasmus Ristolainen forever, and now, because he's a right shot defenseman, and it doesn't really matter what he's done the last 8 years, his name, and we know he makes about $5 million a year, like, he becomes a talking point again here. Like, this, you see how all this is connected, right? Like,
it's, Cody Ceci went for partial return, was a first and a potential third. And I know that
Cody went for nothing. For it was Granlund. Granlund got all the value of that. Ceci was a throw in. I'm kidding.
Yeah. The value of a right-handed defenseman around this time of year is why the value of centers, as we saw last year, explodes around the deadline. And I think it's going to again this year, depending on who is and isn't available. Say Brock Nelson's not available. The rest of the centers just got more expensive. Mm-hmm. And the price of right-handed defensemen at this time of year, we saw Ben Chiarot go for a first round pick in years past. A third pair defenseman.
Yeah, actually, Ben's former agent, Darren Dreger, will be joining us at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, so. that was a pump-up job by Dregs for many shows here on Sabres Live. That's all he kept talking about. Hey, let me ask you this, Shayna, because we know the cap is going up. And I remember when I came into the NHL in 1999-2000, Bob Goodenow kept saying, guys, he was building it up for 4 years before the lockout. We can't take a cap because what's going to happen is the more the cap continue to rise, the more the top guys are going to make their money and the middle guys are not going to be ascending as much. So I look at this cap in 3 years could be $113.5 million. And all I keep thinking is it only benefits the top end players that are going to make a lot of money. The Mikko Rantanen that won $14 million and the Connor McDavid that's going to get $16 and Mitch Marner. Am I far off here thinking that it only going to benefits the big money clubs and the big money players at the end of the day?
I actually do. Because here's the thing. In this cap world, Connor McDavid shouldn't be worth $16 million. He should be a $20 million player, in my opinion, right? If we're going to go like apples to apples, this is what a superstar is worth in this cap world. It is much more than we're going to project for him. I don't know if he'll ever get to that because superstars in this game generally don't get their worth. When Leon Draisaitl signed that big contract, or when Austin Matthews did, right? We're looking at going, they could have pushed for more. They would have been well within their rights for what they're truly worth at this stage in their career, to their teams, or just in the market that it is, right? Nathan McKinnon making $12.5 million is an underpayment. Then it's going to be an underpayment forever. So I think superstar players are going to benefit from it because I think that if they say, I want 14, that's going to be a reality when it wasn't before, right? But I really do think the middle class is going to benefit here because a lot of teams already have their cores locked up. And this is where it's going to be the most intriguing to me. And it's something I know I'm working on for during the break is whether you're in a better position if you lock up your core before you're a good team, during that, or after that. If you lock up your core after it, I think those middle class players are going to benefit way more. Think of the Chernaks of the world and the Shirellis who got those big deals from Tampa Bay after they already won. Think of he was already under contract. Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow getting those big deals because other people want those championship caliber players. I think there's going to be more of a willingness to spend for those players when maybe there wouldn't have been now because people went, we could find our own dollar store versions, which is how they should be pursuing things in the first place. So I do wonder if the middle class is going to benefit a little bit more here, especially around the teams that already have their cores locked up, like maybe the New Jersey Devils.
You mentioned the Devils. What are you expecting from them here? As far as acquisitions, things of that nature. And just a quick update on them, like Siegenthaler got hurt the other night. They have some injuries in their depth, but, in the American League, but this could be an opportunity for Simone Nemitz to come up and have a bigger role. So that's interesting in the sense of not having to potentially leave their organization to balance things out here in wake of injuries. But the Devils have also been rumored for a long time to be trying to fix/improve their top nine. What do you see?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing to have that defensive depth because Nemec is better than the AHL. He's been better for a while. I think when their defensive game slipped off in January, they should have given him a call up just to mix and match their pairs because they were sticking to the same thing and it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Here you have someone who could have shaken things up and they wouldn't do it. So it kind of forces them into using him and figuring out how to, revive their defense because it needs it. Siegenthaler has been one of the best defensemen this year. So losing him hurts. But the fact that you have that in your back pocket is great. I would definitely look at upgrades up front. I don't think it's a bad thing for them to add another center that they trust, because we've seen a lot of injuries over the last couple of years to Heisher and Hughes. And I'm not saying either one's injury prone, but it's a good thing to have an extra center. To have that versatility that you can mix and match your lines if you need, and you're not just stuck to certain patterns. And I don't know how much they trust Mercer to play that role. I keep wanting him to break back out at center, and it doesn't happen enough. So I'm curious if they do go that direction. But if not, and you can lower your cost because you trust Mercer and it's no big deal, and you have Howland and you have four players in your top nine who can play center, maybe you don't need to worry about that as much. They need a good winger. They need somebody else to help drive play that isn't right now, you know, Bratton Hughes. They need somebody else to like take things up a notch. I would have liked Taylor Hall for them. Obviously, that's not an option now, but there's going to be other wingers out there. I don't think they need to go for the hard to play against. I don't think they need to go for the, well, they're a bona fide playoff player. You have Palat for that, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they move him in a deal, I still think they'll be okay. I think they need another play-driving winger to take what was a huge strength and really bring it back up there, because I think that's the one area that you look at and go, okay, there's gaps that maybe you didn't anticipate having.
Okay, let me take it back to the Atlantic Division, because we're all focusing on the wild card race in the Eastern Conference, but there's a race for third place in the Atlantic right now. Ottawa is in third at 62 points, Detroit 61 points, Tampa 60, Boston is 60. There's a bit of a mashup happening right there. Who ends up finishing third in the Atlantic Division? Who do you see that's going to separate themselves and be with Toronto and Florida for the top three teams there?
I still think it's going to be Tampa Bay. They have the elite talent, and I think they're going to make a move or two at the deadline to bolster their depth, which is their biggest weakness of all. And as they get healthier and everything's fine, you get Moser on the blue line. Like, I'm not so worried about Tampa Bay. Ottawa, I think, deserves it. They're earning it. But oh my goodness, those injuries. Now they lose Norris and Pinto. Like, I'm worried about it, because you see all this, you know, all the improvements they're making defensively, and now their goaltending tandem looks really good again, and you have a healthy Ullmark, and Forsberg's elevated his game. You know you have a good third option now who's back in the AHL. It's just all of the injuries piling up and the fact that they're not generating enough offense for me. I think that they're a playoff team in the wild card race, right? But I think Tampa Bay's elite talent plus deadline moves are going to give them that little bit of a boost to finish ahead.
You think five teams from the division is going to make it? I mean, Boston's right there as well. So, you know,
I won't be surprised if the Rangers fall back into it. I'm going to be honest. Like, I really do think that they're going to be one of the teams to do it, because it just seems to be the way. And like, it's the elite goaltending, the elite, in theory, core could do it. But I think it's going to be a good race between them and the Rangers for that spot. The Bruins, I'm very low on. I don't like their defense. Their power play is a wreck. They give up way too much offense when they're on the power play. The goaltending's inconsistent. Like, the team's just not good enough. I think they need to step back and retool.
What about Detroit?
Detroit, I think, is going to be right in the playoff race. It's amazing to see what a change in coach can do, because sometimes we don't see the impacts as well. And here it is, night and day. If they can make one or two moves at the deadline, like get themselves a good middle six scorer, I'm a lot higher on them than I was, you know, like to start the year.
Yeah, McClellan has matched Babcock for the best 20-game start behind the bench in Red Wings history, 15-4-1. Shayna, thank you. Appreciate the early visit, and I think we'll do this again next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. No swearing, she promised. And Darren Dreger tries to uphold that standard as we continue on Sabres Live after this.